All right, without further ado, let us welcome into Press Row for the first time Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance, the 10-part documentary focusing on Michael Jordan's final season with the Bulls, the 97-98 season that yielded a sixth NBA title. Jason Hare, thank you so much for joining us. Jason, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Before we get into the documentary, it wasn't long after everything had been canceled where even on our show we were like, man, that Jordan documentary needs to move up from June. Talk about how that went. If March 11th was the day Rudy Gobert tested, March 12th was the day that the ACC and SEC and all the conferences got wiped out with their conference tournaments. How quick did ESPN get in touch with you, and how did that work out to where this thing was moved from June up until this weekend?
Well, I'll tell you this. You said March 11th because I was recently wondering what date that was, the Gobert night, and that seems to be the night that all sports fans and maybe all Americans will remember as a turning point, because right when Gobert, the game got canceled, then Tom Hanks, he tested positive. Everyone, we were in a bar. I was in a bar with my producer and one of my best friends who have been working on this project with me for the better part of 4 years, and we looked at each other and didn't even say anything. And we all just burst out laughing, not, of course, at the conditions, but we thought they're going to make us do this early. And we were already working at 11 out of 10 speed, but we thought, all right, if basketball disappears, if these sports disappear, but I should say that it wasn't like an oh no moment. It was a this is great. Like there's going to be an opportunity here that we could actually fill a void for people, because I'm a huge believer. I mean, every documentary I've done has been about sports. And I'm a huge believer that sports are such a microcosm for society and for our lives. It connects us in so many ways, and it forms our identity in so many ways. So with that void there, there's a void in connection. We all have a void in connection these days. We can't leave our houses or apartments. We can't shake somebody's hand. We can't give somebody a hug. And sports, you go to a game, and there's a stranger next to you who you don't know in the first inning. By the ninth inning, you're high-fiving that guy, and he's like a lifelong friend. And sports bonds people in that way. So there's an opportunity here for us to fill that void a little bit, and all of us are really proud to be able to fill that void.
And this will be done over 5 weeks, correct? I mean, it starts April 19th and runs through May 17th, so will there be two episodes every Sunday night?
Yeah, it's two every Sunday night at 9 o'clock, so 9 and 10 every Sunday night, a new one. So 1-2 this week, next week it'll be 3-4, and so on.
Okay, was there any discussion about that when the pandemic hit as far as spreading them out? I didn't know what the way to maximize this would be. How did y'all settle on 5 two-episode Sundays?
Because 9 and 10 still aren't done yet. We are still editing 10, and we're in the finishing touches of editing 9, but you still have a few more weeks of work to do on that because you have to subtitle it and audio mix it and sound design it, and you have to up-res all of the footage. There's a lot of work that goes into it after the quote-unquote hard work is done. We weren't going to be done with 10 no matter what until around May 17th. So the decision was, do we put out 1 and 2 on March 30th and then wait 3 weeks and put out 3 and 4? Do we put all 10 out on March 17th and let people binge them then? Do we do one a week for 10 weeks leading up to May? I'm sorry, did I say March 17th? I meant May 17th. So basically, we just worked backwards from May 17th and said, all right, let's do 5 weeks in a row with two episodes per week, and that brought us to April 19th.
Wow. I read where there are 106 different, is it interviews or people interviewed? And so my question would be, how far back did you go? I had an older brother that was at Chapel Hill when Michael Jordan was there. I'd be curious how much time his college days are mentioned in this, even though this focuses on the 97-98 team. But is that right that 106 folks were interviewed?
106 or 108 total shoots. We interviewed Michael three times, and we interviewed 106 people. We interviewed his sons together, so that was one shoot. But 106 different people were interviewed for this documentary, yeah. And Roy Williams, for instance, is a UNC guy. He's interviewed about Michael's UNC days. James Worthy is interviewed about Michael's UNC days. We go all the way back to Michael's birth. But
okay.
We also go all the way back to Steve Kerr's birth and Dennis Rodman's and Scottie Pippen's and Phil Jackson's. All of the main characters that made up that 97-98 team we tell their backstory in depth. So there's a lot of micro documentaries and biographies about people within this macro documentary about the Bulls dynasty, which is told through the lens of that 97-98 season.
All right, this sounds like fun. You're listening to Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance, the 10-part documentary that has been moved up and will start this Sunday night. You're listening to Jason here on Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.
So is Joe Klein's backstory in episode 6 or episode 7?
That's in episode 19. I don't know when you guys are going to see that.
All right, I'm curious because I know Jordan's now talking about this as well, and I don't know if it's like preemptive, hey, guys, there's so much detail in this, you're going to see that I was really kind of a bleep hole. I mean, I know y'all don't worry about it because you're making a documentary, but how much do you think this is going to change a lot of people's perception about Michael Jordan?
Well, it's not entirely accurate to say I don't worry about it, because I do. I would worry about it if we weren't portraying him accurately. I think that Michael's concern, and a lot of I've seen that headline around, is that Michael thinks that this will be quote-unquote, people think he's a quote-unquote horrible person. And I think that people took that quote that I gave to Richard Deitch in a piece for The Athletic, and I was paraphrasing what Michael said to me the first time we met. And I said, why do you want to do this project? And he said, I don't. And I said, well, why not? And he said, well, when you see this footage, which is this unseen footage from that season, the cameras were everywhere, especially during practice, he was a demanding teammate. He demanded a lot of himself, and he demanded just as much, nothing more, nothing less, from his teammates around him. And the way that he motivated these guys oftentimes was through aggression. And he was a tough guy to be around. It was not going to be an easy practice. He had the philosophy that you make practice harder than the game ever could be, so that the game feels easy, no matter how difficult it is. So you'll see that footage, and frankly, I am I'm happy and proud of Michael that he allowed this footage to be seen, because it's not very flattering. And his concern was that there would be no context given. So if you just watch the clip of him yelling at a teammate and say, wow, that guy's tough to be around, he might be a jerk. I assured Michael that we have 10 hours of context to give, and I assured him that you'll be given every opportunity to explain why you had to behave that way and why that was necessary to get 6 rings in 8 years. You have to be that kind of a leader. Will Perdue, who was one of the big men on the first three-peat teams, he said in the doc, yes, he was an a-hole, and I'm cleaning it up. That's ESPN will have ESPN 2 will have the uncensored or the censored version. You can watch censored on ESPN 2 and uncensored on ESPN. Will Perdue said, yeah, he was an a-hole, but looking back, he was a great teammate, because all of us have these rings. All of us have what he wanted us to have. And Michael says himself, I wanted that for myself, but I wanted it for them as well. I wanted them to experience the joy that I experienced when I won this. And I didn't want them to take shortcuts. He was adamant that when he got to the Bulls, they couldn't fill half of Chicago's stadium. Think of it, the Chicago Bulls, if you ask someone from another country right now, name one NBA team, they're probably going to say the Bulls because of Michael Jordan. Back in 1984-85 season, they couldn't fill half of that arena. So Michael built this team from the ground up with his hard work. And he refused to let anyone take any shortcuts. If you came in here, you were not just going to put a ring on your finger because you were riding his coattails. He was going to make you earn it. And he wanted people to know that context. And I'm happy to say that they will when they watch this.
Do you think Michael Jordan would be as revered and iconic if he, warts and all, in the locker room, off the court, all of it, if his career happened in today's day and age of social media?
I think he would have abhorred social media today. He would have been a PR person's nightmare today, because he wouldn't have cooperated with anything. He didn't care about Twitter likes or Twitter followers or Instagram likes. There's no way. Michael Jordan doesn't know what a TikTok is, and he never would have wanted to. At heart, this guy who was the most prolific superstar of his generation in sports was a gym rat. He was most comfortable in the gym. It's like you talk about people like Elvis Presley and Michael Jackson, they were most comfortable on the stage. Michael Jordan was most comfortable with a basketball in his hand, alone in a gym. That's where he wanted to be. So the fame that came along with it, and the money that came along with it and the endorsements that came along with it, that's great, but that's icing on the cake. The cake was the actual winning on the basketball court. In episode 5, we go pretty deep into the Air Jordan brand and how that came to be and the fact that he wanted Adidas at first. He's not a Nike guy. But he's very quick at the end of that story that we do, that little flashback we do, to say that none of these endorsements would be possible. Coke, McDonald's, Nike, any of those, Hanes, Gatorade, none of those would be possible if he didn't perform on the court. And he was very, very aware, keenly aware throughout his entire career that everything depended on his performance on the court. That's where his attentions lied.
You're listening to Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance, the 10-part documentary on Michael Jordan that begins this Sunday night. Jason, we had Pat Condellis on not long ago with HBO that did the scheme, and he called LSU, he called Arizona, he offered them a chance to talk, and they all said no. I read where everybody that you asked, nobody said no. Is that correct?
It is correct. I mean, we did get, technically, we got a few no's because people just weren't in the country, or they were out of town, or they weren't there when we were there. But I'm happy to say that nobody said no, that we needed to speak on a certain topic. Every single story that we wanted to tell, and there's dozens of micro stories within this macro story, every story we wanted to tell, we got the person that I wanted telling the story to tell it. So I'm proud of that, and that's due to the work of Jake Rogal and our producers and our staff. But no, we didn't get any no's from people that changed the outcome of this series whatsoever.
All right, Jason, when we have great guests like you, we love to close with a rapid fire. First thing off the top of the head. Ready to play?
Sure.
Okay. I know this is airing on ESPN and ESPN2. The unfiltered version, would that be PG-13 or R?
Hard R.
Wow. All right, which interview?
No nudity.
Okay, no nudity. Okay, excellent. Well, Carmen Electra's in it. Which interview was most surprising for you in terms of the quality of stories?
Magic Johnson. It's boring to say, but Michael Jordan, man. I did not expect him to come to play the way that he came to play, and it should be no surprise that he is the Michael Jordan of giving interviews, as he is the Michael Jordan of being Michael Jordan. He was outstanding. So normally there's a lesser character that emerges. Like, I don't know if you saw the 85 Bears, but Steve McMichael, Mongo, he all of a sudden was the hidden star of that movie. Michael was the hidden and obvious star of this movie.
Favorite NBA team?
Boston Celtics.
You mentioned that you did the 85 Bears, and you also wrote and did the 30 for 30 on the Fab Five, two of the great ones out there.
No doubt.
What is your favorite 30 for 30?
Aside from saying O.J. Made in America, which isn't the 30 for 30, it's on a different level. It's not even a sports documentary. My favorite technical 30 for 30 was the two Escobars, followed closely by Hillsborough. I thought both of those were brilliant, perfect films.
Okay, O.J.'s been done. Michael Jordan's been done. What's next on the docket for you?
A cold beer and a nap.
Amen to that. And have you put your head around the very real possibility that you, in a year, you may be an Academy Award winner?
No, because we're not eligible.
It's not going to go into the theater?
Ezra's doc was so good that they changed the rules.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They changed the rules to say it can't be a multi-part, and it can't be this, and it can't be that. So we are not Oscar-worthy. You know what, man? As cliche as it is to say, the reward is talking to you guys. This part of the process is almost the victory lap, and especially this time around, that this is a bleak time, man, for all of us on different levels, and people have been harder hit than others. But the fact that we get to entertain people for an hour or two a week and have people look forward to something when there's nothing to look forward to in the sports landscape, that is a huge reward for all of us, and all of us are really proud of that on my team.
Jason, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for delivering. I mean, like I said, we talked about it as soon as the world was collapsing. We would love for this Jordan thing to get moved up, and you have done that, and thank you so much for taking the time and for visiting with us here in Chattanooga on Press Row.
My pleasure. Stay safe, guys, and hope you enjoy it Sunday.
All right, you do the same. Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance 10-part documentary, starting this Sunday night. 648-1051 is the number. Back with more. You're listening to Press Row here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.